Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I did. To remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Bob Chapman, the international forecaster. And we're going to be talking about what's going on financially in our country, financially throughout the world. And, of course, as you remember, it was just last Friday when the stock market dropped some 390 points in one day. The price of oil approached $140. I think it was $139 a barrel. And, of course, things were rather uncertain. And then, starting this week, while the stock market was coming back a little bit, not strongly, but coming back, the price of oil dropped down to about $131 a barrel. But gasoline, in many places in the United States, is over $4 a gallon, and certainly in our community was up to $4.25 a gallon for unleaded, up to about $4.50-$4.55 a gallon for leaded gasoline. So this is having an impact, certainly having an impact on the airlines, on the trucking industry, on the plastic industry, on the fertilizer industry, upon farming, upon trucking, about so many different things. Our economy is not doing too well. In fact, General Motors is losing money on every car they produce in the United States, car, truck, SUV. The same thing is happening for Ford Motor Company. They're not doing well financially. And, of course, they have always been the bulwark of American production. Certainly we know that many of our major corporations are not making the profits. Now, if they have their manufacturing facilities over in China, they're doing pretty well. But if they have their manufacturing centered here in America, they're really not doing that well. We still have Boeing, but, of course, the Chinese now have all of our secrets. Boeing's turned over certainly information to the Chinese. Many of the parts that go into a Boeing plane are made in China. And now China's going to begin to challenge America and Europe as far as producing a large commercial airliner. So as we look at things unfolding, why, well, the future doesn't look as good as it has in the past. The old adage by William McChesney Martin, formerly director of the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, who said that it is the job of the head of the Federal Reserve Board to take away the punch bowl just when the party is getting interesting. In other words, when there's suddenly prosperity and everybody's doing very well, you've got to start cutting back on what's happening in the economy. You'll destroy the value of the dollar. Well, unfortunately, Ben Bernanke is not doing what he needs to protect the dollar. They've decided to protect the financial institutions and destroy the value of the dollar. And when you do that, you destroy the value of the savings and pensions and annuities, insurance policies. You destroy the life savings of the average American. And with that as a background, Bob Chapman, it's so good to have you with us.
Well, thank you. It's very nice to be back again.
Tell us what your take is on what's going on.
Well, I thought it was interesting that yesterday the Chinese representative to the UN told the United States that they better not put into effect any legislation that's protectionist. And I guess they were probably pointing that out because they own, I don't know exactly, but their total foreign reserves are $1.3-something trillion. And I would assume probably $1 trillion of it is in the dollar form, probably U.S. securities and things like that. And so China is dictating to the United States. They also said that they wanted...
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. All right, Bob, they wanted what now?
They wanted Americans to save more money. Now, I think that's interesting in as much as an exporter to the United States. If people save more money, they'll buy less Chinese products. So I think it was a silly statement, rather self-defeating. But the Chinese, because they've been led into these markets, want to do what they want to do, and it's just not going to work. And the only way that that can be sorted out is eventually by having a war. And I think that's what it's going to come to. But the Chinese are very forward. They demand things. And that just isn't going to happen.
Well, of course, the thing is, Bob, that the Americans really, of course, they're destroying our currency. If Americans were saving more money, we wouldn't be having as many problems as we are having. It would be the best thing in the world for America and for the world if Americans were not purchasing so many goods. We're beginning to save it, raise the value of our currency, so it would be worth something. I think the Chinese are afraid that the dollar is going to become worthless, and they're going to be sitting over there with $1 trillion worth of American dollars that won't buy very much.
Well, it might be worth 40 or 50% less before this is all over.
Right.
But, you know, one of the reasons we have such large individual debt and no savings, we haven't had savings for a long time, is that people say, gee, I can't buy as much of the dollar. There's more inflation than what the government says there is. So why should I save? I'll just go spend it. Well, now what's happened is they don't have as much money as they had before. And they can't spend as much as they could before because the net effect of their wages versus inflation has cut down their buying power. And their wages are lower because of free trade and globalization, offshoring and outsourcing, and especially offshoring in China. And, you know, the average Chinese worker gets paid probably around $3.75 an hour in U.S. dollars. And so they have to export in order to make their economy work. And I think
hold that thought, Bob. We're bringing our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob Chapman was just saying that the Chinese are actually suggesting that the Americans save more and stop spending so much, which would seem to be counterproductive from the Chinese point of view, because after all, what are people doing? They're buying predominantly Chinese-made goods. Well, the Chinese obviously realize, of course, if the Americans continue buying as they are, the government keeps running up more debt, that they have about at least $1 trillion in American dollars, and they end up holding dollars that are worth 50 cents on the dollar. In other words, they're looking after their own interests. They would like to see the American economy stabilized, but it doesn't look like our leaders have any intention of doing that. So you pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, China, from the very beginning, realized that what the Federal Reserve and the United States had done is entrap itself, sort of like being in a box, and they can't get out. And China went ahead and did business anyway, and China also amassed this tremendous fortune, is what it is. And the problem with the fortune is that it's not what it supposed to be. In other words, it's worth a lot less. And so that's just one aspect of the international problems with the dollar and with the credit crisis, the collapsing residential and commercial real estate markets. This just in 8 years follows the collapse of the dot-com boom, which was engineered by the Fed as well as was the real estate industry boom. And then, of course, that was in part and then followed by the exposure of the CDOs and SIVs, which are packages of loans which are put together in the form of bonds and rated AAA when in fact they were BBB, which is the difference between a 10 and a 4. And so you've got all these things going on at the same time. Unemployment is rising relentlessly in the United States. Inflation, contrary to what your government tells you, is 12.625%, not 3.9%. And unemployment is at 5.5%. Even the UR6 unemployment is 9.8%. And so the real unemployment's about 14%. And so you have all these problems. Plus, people are making less money. And at the bottom of the pack, you've got the illegal aliens, and the illegal aliens are working for whatever work they can get at any price, and that drags wages down for American workers, particularly at the lower end of the totem pole, so to speak. And so you have continued diminishing wages. And it's not only happened in the United States. Ford is going to build a $3 billion plant in nearby Mexico City. And in order to convince Ford that they should do that, the unions in Mexico decided to do what was done by the unions in the United States. When you hire new people in the U.S. in the automotive industry, they don't get $29 an hour. They get $14.50. And, of course, the other workers, as they grow older within the system, will be phased out. And so that higher rate of pay will diminish over a period of time. Well, the Mexicans have done the same thing. And instead of paying $4.50 an hour, they pay $4.25 to the new people. And that beats out the Japanese labor costs. So what it has done, this globalization and free trade, it's driven wages down all over the world. Now, you're not going to read that in your media because they don't tell you the truth. Or they just don't tell you what's going on, and they call that lying by omission.
But don't you think, Bob, what they've really done, certainly as they've raised the wage level in China and just simply lowered the wage level in the United States. In fact, a lot of this is simply an attack on first world countries. And America, of course, is the one that has had the highest living standards. So we are coming under the maximum attack. They know what they're doing. They're lowering our wage standards, as you point out. But, of course, certainly things are a lot better over in Vietnam and Thailand and Cambodia than they were before because now these people are coming out of abject poverty. But the only way they can do that is, of course, to impoverish the American people. I think we're just seeing the beginning of this effort to transfer the wealth of our country to other countries. Would you agree or disagree?
Absolutely agree. In order to implement world government, they have to take down the developed economies,
right,
and in particular, the United States, Europe, and Canada.
Right.
And then other nations will follow.
And they're certainly doing an excellent job of that. And the average American has no idea this is part of a plan to impoverish the American people. When you understand it, it all makes sense. If you understand that the reason that they are raising the price of oil and of, you know, is to get us out of our cars, and that's how they manipulate us, why, it really makes a lot of sense. I don't think there's any shortage of oil out there. There's lots of oil. They just refuse to develop it. Why? Well, of course, partly because they make a lot of money that way by creating artificial shortages, but also to manipulate our population and get us, you know, away from the automobile. You know, we're into a situation where we'll have to use public transportation, and that way they can monitor us ever so much more efficiently.
That's true. And that is what they're doing, and that's why they're deliberately doing it. And you know, you have all these new laws that have been put into place for the last 8 years, the Patriot Acts and numerous other laws which control the American people.
Right.
And the same thing is going on in England and in Germany and Denmark and on and on and on. I mean, the only place I know of that's not going on is Russia. And, you know, this is an enormous thing that they're undertaking, because in this process, what they're going to do is they're going to end up destroying society as we've known it. And an awful lot of people are going to die.
Well, I don't think they're really concerned about that. I think that they think there's too many people in the world anyway. We'd be a lot better off, you know, with perhaps only maybe a billion people in the world. And of course, these concepts come out of the Club of Rome. Their publication back in 1971, The Limits of Growth, which became the basis of sustainable development, population control, and so many of the things that are going on today.
Well, I've seen those reports, and you're right. And they call them useless eaters.
Right.
And in a sense, they're right, because, you know, they just kind of hang around their whole life and don't do anything else. But, you know, that's their feeling about them. Let's not feed them. Let's just get rid of them. I mean, we don't need them, and that's the end of it. And when you hear people... such as the Queen's consort,
Prince Philip
in England, say that I'm going to come back as a virus in my next life and kill people, and it's not very encouraging. The guy must have a, you know, I've spoken to him a number of times, and I've never brought that up, but this guy really must have a couple of screws loose.
Well, they just have a different worldview than you and I do. They don't value the other people's lives. They consider themselves superior. They're the ones who are in a ruling position, and everybody else really is sort of like a feudal slave. And these people of great wealth who belong to these secret organizations, working behind the scenes, directing the course of world events, creating wars, creating famines, and now they can modify the weather. The average individual doesn't understand why we're having all the problems with the weather. But of course, here in America, everything that's doing with weather modification is top secret, because we wouldn't want Osama bin Laden to learn what we were doing, would we? And they can create famines and droughts and storms and earthquakes and all sorts of what people would think would be natural disasters. But unfortunately, nothing is natural today, and we don't know what they're doing, because it's all top secret. If there's nothing to conceal, why is everything having to do with the weather and their other programs considered top secret, or has to be brought under the control of the State Secret Act? Because, you know, if the public were to learn, it would endanger the state. Well, it would only endanger the elite who run the state. The last thing they want the American people to know, and the people of the world to know, is the truth.
Well, that's why you have this program, and it certainly does bring the proof. It's an important part of the exposure of what's going on, and I only wish there were thousands like you who would go out and do this sort of thing, so that more people could learn and be convinced of this great problem that we have, and a problem that has existed for a long, long time, centuries for that matter.
Amen to that. Well, we have others, fortunately. We have Alex Jones, we have Joyce Farley, we have Jeff Rentz, we have John Leffler. I mean, people that I know that we work with that are right there in the front lines trying to get the information out as well. We all have a little different approach. I like to think ours is better, perhaps more realistic, but they're all, of course, pointing out what's going on and certainly helping people to realize that we've got a real problem and we're not being told the truth.
Oh, there's that confounded music.
Unfortunately, yes. Well, the computer is telling us we're going to have to go to a break when we get back. Our guest this evening is Bob Chapman, international forecaster, talking about financial issues. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, why we're on the edge of a financial catastrophe in America today. Okay, Bob, pick up the story.
Well, process that we're going through is financially is one of the Federal Reserve's making. They decided that they had to have another boom in order to keep the U.S. and the world economy going. And in this process, a lady came along who was an analyst in New York, and she's a bank specialist, analyst, and she said, something's wrong at Citigroup. I mean, their assets aren't worth what they say they are. And that started this whole avalanche. I mean, this problem wouldn't even exist today if it wasn't for that one woman.
No, because now, if I think our listeners need to understand, Citicorp or Citigroup is the largest single bank in the United States. One of the largest in the world, but it certainly is the largest bank in the United States. And it was simply insolvent.
That's true, and it's been insolvent a number of times, and every time it gets insolvent, the government steps in, or the Fed steps in, more likely. They stepped in 1990-91. To take over Citigroup surreptitiously, secretly, and very few knew about it. They admit it now, but they certainly didn't then. And that's when Citigroup's stock went from about $45 a share down to $12. And about 3 years ago, we said to short Citigroup stock at, I think it was $44.18. And the shorting it means you're betting it's going to go down. And what happened was it went down, and today it traded around 20, 21. And they just did a big underwriting at 25 and a half or so. And it's headed back down to 12 again. But banks like that will not be allowed to go under. It's just like UBS and the Union Bank Suisse in Europe. I don't believe that the Swiss government will allow them to go under. And, of course, they've joined and closed ranks with the Illuminati in Europe, so they're part of the problem now anyway. And that's why these major institutions cooperate so closely with the U.S. government, which is also controlled by the Illuminati. So they're all working together. But this credit crisis is really insolvable. I mean, there's just no way that they're going to get out of this without great pain and probably a collapse. And they may all lose their power in that process. Because if we go into a depression and people, you know, say who did this to us, then I think you're going to have investigations and trials. And when it's pointed out that these people did lots of terrible things financially and economically to our country and to the American people, I think they're going to be on the list to go to jail. And I think they'll lose their assets, etc. And so they know, and this has happened to them before, incidentally. A classic example was the fall of the Lombard system in 1348, which was the same year as the plague. And the financiers all got thrown out of Venice.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Bob was simply pointing out that there's really nothing new under the sun. We have a financial situation that's simply untenable. It's insolvable today. They've created all sorts of prosperity by creating money that doesn't exist. It's all a mirage, but certainly we've lived very well. But Bob is simply pointing out they did the same thing in Venice, and it was certainly in, I guess, the mid-1500s, the same year as the plague, when, of course, their financial system centered around Venice collapsed, and of course, then the bankers were held responsible. The bankers have done the same thing here, not the average banker, but as the central bankers who've created artificial prosperity by printing money based upon nothing and creating money out of nothing. But the more money that's out there, the more prosperous we think we are. But then comes the day of reckoning, and that's the time that's upon us today. So pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, I think that themselves entrapped. And they're trying desperately to extricate themselves or extend the problem as long as they can. And that's the mode that they're in now. But they might have, with their tremendous amount of money and credit that they've made available, I mean, in May the figure was 18% increase in M3, which is the increase in money and credit. And this past month in May, it was 17%. And it's come down a little bit, but they're still preposterous figures. And then you've got the discount window that's open. Who knows how much money they're hauling off every week or every day. And then on top of that, you have these auctions that they now have. And then you have the increases in money outstanding and available for investment in the stock markets of the world.
I think the interesting thing is, Bob, that in the past the Federal Reserve System has lent money only to commercial banks. Now it's lending money to investment banks and encouraging them to go ahead and make all sorts of loans. It doesn't matter. It's not their money. It's the Federal Reserve's money. And what they're doing is encouraging the investment banks to continue being irresponsible. And it certainly, if they get into trouble, it'll bring down the Federal Reserve itself.
Well, I think that's going to happen. And I think everybody's going to finally find out why all of these terrible things have happened to them. And I think that the trials will ensue. And I think that the people who are in the inside believe that that could be a possible ending to what they've been doing. And they're not too happy about that. And that's why they put in all of these laws they put in to restrict what we can do, so it would make it more easily to implement martial law and kind of step on the American people. People like you and I would be put in internment camps and probably be liquidated rather quickly. And but this is what they're up to, and this is the direction that they're going in.
Well, these people don't really believe in freedom. They believe in power, and they believe that they're going to usher in a one-world government under the ruling elite. They don't understand, many of them don't understand, their powerful spiritual forces which are energizing this whole movement towards the new world religion, the new world order, and of course the enthronement of a world leader. But of course there are some who do, and I believe these people have a pact with the prince of this world, Lucifer. And strange it may seem, I believe some people have actually made a pact with the devil, and they will get great prosperity, great wealth here in this country, with the reward that, with the promise that they're going to be able to thwart God's plan for the world. And I think they're in for a big surprise. But go right ahead, Bob.
Well, I think the power structure, I think that they think even though the financial world will come down, and I know that they understand that they can't keep it going in its present form until it's purged, is probably the proper word for it. But they think that they're powerful enough to stop any kind of a force that would deprive them of their continual looting of the world public for so many years.
Well, I think that they're really planning on a new currency.
They think they're going to get away with it again.
Beg pardon?
They think they're going to get away with it again.
And you don't think they're going to be able to?
No, I don't. And I'll tell you why. Just simply the Internet. I mean, Stan, you remember back in the early 60s when we were involved in this very thing, talking about the same thing that we're talking about today, and it was only a handful of people, maybe a million people in the United States who understand.
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here with our good friend Bob Chapman. And Bob is simply pointing out that certainly back in the early 60s when he and I were getting involved in learning about what was going on, there were only a small number of people who had any suspicion of what was going on. But now we have the Internet. We can reach literally millions, 100, 150 million people here in America with the truth. And at least the people have the opportunity to get the truth. The question is, will they check it out? Will they find out? Will they become convinced that we're telling them the truth? I think as time gets worse, and times are going to get a lot worse, why at that point, why? I think a lot of people are going to be looking for the answers, and I do what I do. I know Bob does what he does, so that hopefully when things get really bad, you out there in the audience will understand what's going on. You'll be able to communicate with others, and who knows, maybe, just maybe, hopefully, we're going to be able to preserve some element of freedom here in America. Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I think you're right, and I was going to refer to, you know, we've had the Internet effectively for 15 years now, and or so, and it's just a wonderful device. And without it, we couldn't do what we've done. And so today, there's not a million people who understand. There's hundreds of million people, of millions of people worldwide. In America, there's probably 20 or 30 or 40 million people who understand in some degree what we know or what we're talking about. And it's caused a revolution in the education of the masses that there is an ulterior force, as you say, which is satanic in nature, that wants to run the world and run our lives.
Well, I certainly was encouraged to see where Ron Paul got 25% of the Republican vote in Idaho recently. Of course, not a word about it in the controlled media, but he did very well in the Dakotas and in Montana, you know, getting, you know, somewhere between 15, 22, 23%. I think Idaho was certainly the highest number. I think probably the state of Washington, I'm not sure whether they have caucuses or not, but I know he has tremendous support in the state of Washington. So, you know, I'm sure that people, you know, who are hearing our programs, because we have programs in many of those states, people are hearing our programs, are beginning to wake up, they're telling others, and at least these people are beginning to realize that what Ron Paul says is absolutely right, that we've got to get away from the Federal Reserve System, we've got to stop the income tax, we've got to cut back on government, we've got to do something really revolutionary. We've got to return to the Constitution of the United States, from whence our freedom comes. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman. And Bob, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners about the International Forecaster, how they can get a copy, and why they should get a copy, and why they should subscribe to it.
Well, the International Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We publish via the Internet on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Usually runs around 30 pages each time. And we have a hard copy that goes out to those who are not on the Internet. We have a site, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International Forecaster.com. And you can get a free issue by going to that site. You can also email us. That address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster@yahoo.com. Or you can call toll free 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest is Bob Chapman, and if you're out there in the listening audience, and you'd like to talk to Bob, you have a question, our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Well, certainly, you know, as we see this story unfold, and we see, certainly, home foreclosures continuing. It, you know, estimated that you know, certainly well over a million and a half homes have been foreclosed on. I think there are about 6.6% of the homes in the United States are behind, and people who have mortgages behind in their payments, and certainly at least 2% of the process in a foreclosure right now. This is homes of all the homes in the United States. This is a very real problem. I don't think the average individual has any grasp of what we're talking about. We're talking about literally millions of Americans down the line losing their homes, especially as the value of the homes drops because, of course, homes go into foreclosures and sold for less. And you've got people who have a fair amount of money, and they can make the payments on their mortgage, but they suddenly look at a home that's worth, you know, maybe two-thirds of what their mortgage value is. Are they going to hang on to that mortgage and continue making payments on it when there's no way that they will probably during their lifetime ever get that amount of money out of the home they're paying the mortgage on? And a lot of those people are beginning just to pick up and walk away from their homes. And I think they're not too many at the present time, but down the line, they're going to be an awful lot more people whose homes have fallen in value, and they're not going to just continue paying a high interest rate and high mortgage rate for that. So you pick up the story there, Bob.
Well, I figure it's 6.45% right now, and it's going to get considerably worse. We're going to have subprime ALTA resets for the next 4 years, the worst year being from this past June 1st until the end of June of next year. And also, during that process, you're going to have another kind of loan, which is called a pick-and-pay loan, which is an option arm. They're going to be evolving and being reset as well. And those numbers are very high because these are people with $1,000 payments, let's say in a $1 million home, and the $1,000 only paid the interest. And so now that money that's owed on that home isn't $1 million anymore, it's $1.2 million. And the house is worth $750,000. And so, and these people have good credit, mind you. They're going to walk away. 75% of them will walk away. And so, you know, we're going to have an awful lot of homes that are vacant, and those homes are going to be vacant for a long time. This is not going to go away. This will take years. And the madness is that builders, rather than, you know, cutting down to doing 25% or so of what they did in production before, are still doing 50%. And that's dumb. But, you know, if you ask a builder, why are you doing that? You say, well, that's all I know how to do, so I build houses and hope I can sell them. The mentality is unbelievable, and I've been through it, so, and talked to these people, so I know where they're coming from. And so we have a combination of things. We have a very large inventory right now. It's over 10 months of inventory of homes for sale. And then we have the foreclosures. And then we have the different types of loans that are going to reset over the next 5 years. So the problem is not going to go away soon. And those of you who are thinking of buying a home that was selling for $800,000 and it's now selling for $450,000, I'd wait because it may go to $400,000 or lower. I think that we're going to see a long-term continued decline in the price of homes. And that's going to be borne out by all these people who walk away. And, you know, as the prices on homes go down, as Doug Stan said earlier, it takes away the incentive to stay in a house that if you owe $220 on it and it's been appraised at $175, I mean, that's crazy. And so they are walking away, and they're going to continue to do so.
Well, my understanding now is, of course, a lot of other types of loans. The the college loans, certainly the automobile loans. The people who bought, secured or unsecured loans, who have secure or unsecured loans, and a lot of them are beginning to default. Apparently, the people who've been lending money on automobiles are doing an awful lot of foreclosures. They're not getting their money back. They're getting back a truck that, you know, at least is valued $25,000, but they could only turn around and sell it for $15,000. So the people who made the loans on the automobiles and other things are going to be suddenly getting into real trouble too, aren't they? Isn't that the second big bubble that's beginning to burst now?
Yeah, it's credit, particularly revolving credit. And I saw figures the other day, the average family's $8,500 on their credit cards. And then they have other revolving debt at the department store, so to speak. And that was borne out. The figures came out on that. This particular Saturday issue of the forecaster had all the things we're discussing. They were all in there. All that information was in there. And, it's hard to come by. You have to do a lot of research to find it. And, when I saw how ill-informed professionals were, never mind the general public, professionals within the business and Wall Street and banking, they didn't understand, and that's why I started the publication. And it's really kind of like a Reader's Digest of business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And so I think we supply a great service, because what's in the publication is explained so simply. And you don't have to be a college business major or a master's or a doctorate to understand what we're talking about. And if you don't know, all you have to do is email, and we tell you in further detail if you don't understand. And goodness knows, we get over 350 pieces of research a day. In addition, we get probably another 50 to 100 emails that I have to answer. And then I've got about 6 or 8 calls a day to do. Then I've got to write. And when I'm on with you in the evening, Stan, if sometimes I sound dopey, it is because I am. I get up at 3:30 a.m. this morning. And so I'm living on borrowed time. What is this? Approximately 18 hours. And but it suits me. But the point is that, you know, we really put our hearts into this thing. And I'm proud of the fact that people twice a week as subscribers can pick this information up and know all the important things that they're they need to know of what's going on in the world.
Well, I think one of the next significant bubbles that's going to really start to shock the financial world is the derivative bubble. Now, of course, we know that MBA and a couple of the other companies have been writing these derivatives with a very small amount of money in the bank, covering literally trillions of dollars derivatives. And basically, these are insurance policies that the bondholders will pay their debts. Well, we find now that I'm sure Valeo had bonds, and Valeo just went into bankruptcy. So that means that the people who have the insurance policy is going to expect to be paid for the bonds, for the Valeo bonds. And I think we're going to see more and more of our library bonds and our highway bonds and our state bonds and our county and local bonds really not being able to make the payments. And then, of course, who's going to cover the insurance policy on that, because the insurance companies are literally running out of money?
Well, nobody's going to pay it, and their insurance is gone, the rating drops, the market's frozen, and so it's very hard to get rid of municipal bonds. You can't do it unless you take a big haircut. In other words, if a bond was selling at par and 4, 5, 6, 8 months ago, what happened was that these AMBAC and MBIA, who or bond insurers started to voice concern. Moody's and S&P did, and what happened is they raised money, and it's certainly not enough. They're so leveraged. And so that insurance, if they go under, which I think they will, is gone. And the rating is gone, too. So the bond that dropped from par, which is 1,000, down to $700, is now frozen. There is no market, and the market might be $200 or $300. And try raising new money in that venue. It's very difficult. Very difficult to, you know, raise money to do anything right now. And I think that's going to get worse because the whole thing is a scam. I mean, the Fed has lent out over $1 trillion. The European Central Bank has done the same thing. And then on top of it, you've got the Bank of England, the Bank of Canada. They're doing the same thing. And other European countries. And it just goes on and on. And it isn't going to work. It's a fairy tale. And it's going to collapse. And you can take that to the bank. The unfortunate thing is that the doors might be locked.
You can take it to the bank, but you're not going to be able to get in because they're bankrupt. And I think that one of the interesting things is that an awful lot of banks in the United States are going to go down, and you don't know whether your bank has been buying these collateralized debt obligations, these these structured investment vehicles, these various defective financial assets, because if they're holding them, they're really not worth what they're supposed to, and you might wake up one day and find that your bank is financially insolvent. Would that be a fair statement, Bob?
Yes, and you know that the deterioration is going to continue, as I said earlier, on and on. And there's just no way around it.
Well, how can we find out whether or not our bank is actually solvent or not?
You know, Stan, I published about 2 weeks ago a group of them, and I have them on file in the computer, too. So if you want to know what they are, we can give it to you. But there are a number of places that you have to go to get these ratings. You've got to pay for them. But, gee, you know, if you are in Bank X, and you own $500,000 or $100,000 or whatever it is in CDs at that bank, and you find out that 30% of their assets are toxic garbage. I mean, you want to get your money out of there pronto. And you don't know unless you go to look. And so that's why we put that out, because we had received requests from people. There's Vera Bank. You can also go to that. But there's other companies as well. And so if you've got money in banks, in CDs, or on deposit, you got a problem. And anything over $100,000 is not insured. So you got to remember that. And what is the alternative? If you don't want to have, or you already have, what you think are sufficient amounts of gold and silver related assets. A lot of people keep cash because they want some cash too, in the form of a CD or something like that. And those amounts can range widely. And so to get out of the dollar and get out of the American banks, I've recommended that people who want to be in that venue, so to speak, that what they do is they buy Swiss franc government bonds. And we tell them where to go to get them. And the commission is $25, you know, to buy $100,000 or $500,000 Swiss franc government bond. I mean, the commission's a minuscule. And so you can, you know, add that to your financial planning, and you can do it by just asking. And then we'll send you someone who does that. And incidentally, we do not receive any compensation in any way from anybody that we recommend. And so I want to make that quite clear. The only people who pay us are the people who subscribe. And that's it. And so, you know, if we send you to somebody, It's because we've known them for a good long time, in some instances 30 and 35 years. And they can be trusted and they know what they're doing. And they're almost as old as you and I, Stan.
Well, of course, the thing is that these are very, very uncertain times, and I think people have to diversify. People have to cover every base, because I think that tragically, before this whole financial house of cards comes tumbling down, most people are going to get wiped out. You have to understand that the elite are already talking about issuing a new world currency, article in Foreign Affairs about recently, and then an article by one of the gentlemen who is working at the Council on Foreign Relations, is a fellow there, talking about the coming new currency, world currency backed by gold. Obviously, you know, when somebody, the central banks are selling, you know, a couple of 100 tons of gold, who's buying it? Well, I think the people are going to set up the new international monetary system. But when they do, it means the old currency becomes worthless, and then what do you do if everything you have is moderated in those in U.S. dollars?
Well, it's like Iran said yesterday, we've switched all of our money out of European banks except for what we need to do there to do business, and we put it in Asian banks, and we bought gold and gold shares. Now, that's a fact.
Now, we'd heard, of course, that Iran was moving their money out of the European banks, I think probably in part because they're afraid that, you know, their money will be frozen there if America attacks them and Europe comes in on the side of the United States.
And it will.
In fact, I got something.
The Illuminati, and that's all there is to it.
I got something today from somebody of pretty good connections, commenting that Bush was going to be taking another trip to Europe, supposedly to cement relations there, but really to get their agreement and let them know about the coming attack on Iran. Have you heard anything about along that line, or is that just simply disinformation?
No, that's exactly what he's doing. That's what that's all about.
All right.
That's why he was in Israel recently. Now, they're going to have a war. And they're probably going to have another one after that. And they're probably going to have a draft. You know, when I tell people who have money that can start a business in another country to move, if you're retired and you can, and you've got the income, and you don't need that much, I mean, the same income or less than what you use in the United States, move. I mean, why be in harm's way if you don't have to? Not everybody's a warrior. Now, I'll do just the opposite thing. You know, things get hot in the United States. I'm going back. I want to get in the action, even as old as I am.
Well, I think we're living in indeed very frightening times, but exciting times, too, because I really believe behind everything going on today, there are powerful spiritual forces at work, and I believe we're seeing many of the things that were prophesied thousands of years ago coming to pass today. So certainly there is a very real possibility of a worldwide famine. There's a very real possibility of a worldwide epidemic. There's a very real possibility of a worldwide war. And that, of course, would have terrible, terrible devastation, certainly on America and the rest of the world. Well, Bob, we're out of time. I want to thank you once again for being with us. One parting thought before I let you go.
I love being on with you.
All right. God bless. We'll talk to you.
And if anybody's got any questions, just send an email. You have the address or call the number, and they'll forward it to me. And particularly on investments, and we're there to help you. And if you're subscribers and you have questions about some of the stocks that you have, send them along.
Hold, let you go. We're out of time. God bless. Bye bye.
Gone down, and some of them have gone up.
Well, there was Bob Chapman. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Bob. And if you have not yet heard my talk or seen my talk on DVD on the financial tsunami, let me recommend it to you. I think it gives you an overall view of what's going on, the significance of hedge funds, of derivatives, certainly what is happening, the impact of oil, the impact of the fact that America is the greatest debtor nation in the world today, the fact that our real debt is somewhere between $50 and $60 trillion, and we just don't have that money, but that is what we owe on our, certainly our Social Security, and then of course the derivatives. They're somewhere between $500 and $600 or $700 trillion in derivatives out there, and when that house of cards comes down, why, of course, hang on to your hat. But understand that you need to understand these terms and how it fits together and what the Federal Reserve really is doing. So my talk on the financial tsunami and the syllabus is excellent. Then let me mention our pamphlets on the history of money and our pamphlet on the financial meltdown. Then the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. If you haven't read it, you need to. We have an Amazon store. We probably put out 15 to 20 copies of that book all over the world every single month, every single week. Now, we're talking about every week putting out copies of this book. It's the best book we have. It's written by our good friend Ed Griffin. It's The Creature from Jekyll Island. We carry a book called The Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, who we knew before he passed away. We carry a book called Fiat Money Inflation in France. We carry Professor Sutton's book, Gold for Investment and Gold for Survival. And if you'd like more information, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. If you've not yet, of course, started laying in your food supplies, if you've not got a Berkey water filter, so you'll be able, to, of course, to have potable water if suddenly there's an interruption of water supply, we certainly would hope that many of you out there would want to get a Berkey water filter, and you get those through us. Why, you get a free CD or a free DVD, something, I should say, pre-DVD or a free CD or a tape set that we produced, as long as we produced it. Well, you can get that with a Berkey water filter, Big Berkey, Berkey Light. The Big Berkey is not available in California, but is available, I think, in every other state except Iowa. Berkey Light's available in every state. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you out there will certainly want to get my talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret out there, and you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand that secret. That's the forbidden secret, and as the syllabus goes with that, my talk on the planned police state, and the syllabus goes with that. If you'd like to understand who it was who murdered Martin Luther King, if you'd like to learn about the trial that was actually put together by the Martin Luther King's family to bring out the truth about the fact that he was assassinated as a CIA operation operating under direction from the highest levels of our government. You want to get the four CD set, The Execution of Martin Luther King, and the book that goes with that, An Act of State. That's The Execution of Martin Luther King, and you'll learn all about the trial. Of course, you never heard about it, and certainly you didn't hear about the trial dealing with the execution of Martin Luther King, the suit that was brought against Lloyd Jowers, who was part of the conspiracy, who actually confessed to it. And there were 58 different witnesses at that trial, and hardly a word in the controlled media in America. It just shows you we do have freedom of the press. That means if you control the press, you have the freedom to suppress whatever you want to. So again, of course, we need to have you understand what's really going on in the world today. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, because we hope that many of you will want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Hear my talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, available on DVD. And then if you hope many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out on over 60 outlets every single week, bringing the truth to the American people, please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Senator Don Rogers. And Senator Rogers was in the Senate here in the state of California. Senator Rogers, how long were you up there?
18 years.
But he gave 18 years of his life to push, you know, the conservative philosophy, the constitutional philosophy, and as a Christian operating within Sacramento, pretty tough place to operate, wasn't it?
It was pretty lonely sometimes.
Well, you had Dick Mountjoy there with you, and between the two of you, while you accomplished a certain amount, but looking back over that all the time that you were there, what's your ultimate feeling? Was it really worthwhile?
Yeah, no doubt about it, Dr. Stan. It was worthwhile. It was very interesting. I learned a lot. Met a lot of very fine people. Met a lot that weren't too fine. But overall, it was very worthwhile, and I felt like I was able to make a contribution and kind of hold back the tide a little bit and maybe get the constitutional word out to people. Remind them that we have a constitution and we better preserve it.
Amen to that. Did you have anything to do with doing away with that state inheritance?
Thanks for mentioning it. You know, one of the campaign promises I made back in 1978 when I was campaigning for the assembly, I ran into people all over the district that would come up to me and say, Don, if you get elected, please get rid of this terrible, terrible death tax. A lot of times, you know, a couple would pay taxes on everything they've earned, completely taxed, and then because, say, the husband died, the wife would inherit his half the estate and immediately be hit with a huge tax bill. And maybe there was no money in the farm or the ranch or the dairy or the business. Excuse me. Yet they had to come up with a big bunch of money, and they'd have to sell part of the business or borrow money or some way. Anyway, so I said, okay, I'll do what I can. So the first bill I introduced after I was elected in 1979, when we started our session, was a bill to abolish the inheritance and gift tax in California. Democrat-controlled committee immediately killed the bill. I introduced it again the next year. They killed it again. I said, well, hey, this is not getting the job done. So I wrote an initiative, Dr. Stan, and got volunteers all over the state to sign petitions and get it on the ballot. We had 5 months to collect 473,000 valid signatures. In 4 months, instead of 5 months, we collected almost 1 million signatures because people hated the tax so much. And we got it on the ballot in June 1982, and the people in California voted to get rid of these two taxes by a 2-to-1 majority. So as of June 1982, there's been no inheritance or gift tax in California, and I don't think there ever will be.
Well, I certainly hope not, and I'm very grateful to you for doing that, because not only the tragedy of losing a mate or someone you love, but then to have the state stomp on you. And, of course,
yeah,
the trouble is...
Since 1982, since getting rid of those two taxes, we saved the California families over $50 billion, Dr. Stan. I'm very proud of that.
And I think you're justifiably proud of it. And I think people have to understand that politicians will always spend and waste money. Why? That's how they get reelected. And it's not their money, and they'll spend it on all sorts of things. But it's really all about getting elected. I'm going to give, you know, all my people who support me, you're going to get all special favors. You're going to reelect me. But, of course, in the process, we impoverish the nation, we impoverish our state. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with Senator Rogers. Well, Senator Rogers, I'll tell you what, I, for one, am very appreciative of what you've done, and I hope that all the other people listening are as well.
Well, I'm glad you got it done before you needed it, Dr. Stan.
Right.
You know, they tried to put it back on the people. I told you that story.
No, tell us about it.
Okay, I will. When I get back on the air.
You're on the air right now. Go ahead.
Let's see, 4 years later, in 1986, even though the people had voted 2-1 to get rid of those two taxes, the death tax and the gift tax, the Senate Revenue and Taxation Committee, they were searching for more money, more ways to tax the people, so they decided, well, we'll reimpose the inheritance and gift tax. Well, I heard about it, and I called a committee consultant, a guy named Martin Helmke. I said, Martin, I understand your committee is looking at reimposing the inheritance tax. He said, that's right, Senator Rogers. We're looking at a lot of things, and that's one of them. I said, well, Martin, let me remind you of something. Take that statute out. It's now law. And you read it carefully because I wrote it. And I put a clause in there that says the only way that this tax can ever be reimposed is by a majority vote of the people in a general election. There's a dead silence on the other phone for about 10 minutes. Oh, Senator, I remember. You know, you're right. I remember. I heard the next day they took that off the table and decided not to try to reimpose the tax because they knew no way could they get the people to vote that tax back on themselves.
Well, I think you should have asked for a two-thirds vote rather than simply a majority vote.
Well, of course, some liberal judge would have probably said, oh, that's unconstitutional, and would have thrown everything out. But this way they couldn't do that.
Well, I think the thing is that the government's like a voracious lion. It always wants more and never has enough.
You're right. Government is an insatiable appetite for more and more money. And you know what happens? When government gets more and more money, they get bigger and stronger financially, and the people get weaker and weaker financially. So that's why I tell people the only way you keep government under control, Dr. Stan, on every level is to give them less money. Don't vote for any bond issues, any tax increases, any assessment increases, any fee increases. Don't vote for any of that. Keep them in line by keeping them starving. Keep them hungry.
Well, you know, I really couldn't believe that last year the people of the state of California voted for $40 billion in bonds, you know, and $3 billion for research on fetal embryonic stem cells. Well, there is no evidence that things work. Adult stem cells seem to work fine. Nobody, of course, believes in embryonic stem cells except the people of California. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Senator Rogers was just saying, you never want to give government money, because you give government money, it'll be misused, and they'll always want more. The more money they have, the more money they'll spend, and it is his belief, and I believe he's absolutely right, that the only way we can survive is to starve government, to keep the money away from them, because they're not going to use it for useful things. The federal government will use it for wars, the state government will use it for, well, just whatever they want to use it for. But the more money you give them, the more they'll spend. And Senator Rogers says you shouldn't be voting for bond issues or for any of these other issues because, of course, it's just more and more and more money. It's almost, Senator Rogers, though, as if a lot of people think, well, since they're bonds, it's not going to increase my taxes. In fact, I remember last year they said we want $40 billion for bonds. It's not going to increase your taxes. How could they say that with a straight face?
It's going to pay, probably cost them 2 or 3 times as much as the face of the bond issue when they pay it back with all the interest over the 15 or 10 or 20 years or whatever it is.
You know, of course, when we had Senator Gray Davis there in Sacramento, I think that the state, annual budget was about $90 billion. I mean, terrible. Gray Davis was totally irresponsible. And then we got Arnold Schwarzenegger in, and he's been in there 6 years, and the state budget's up to over $140 billion a year. How could he possibly have increased it that much in just a matter of 6 years?
Well, I know. It's just, out of control, spending out of control. And as you point out, Dr. Stan, many things the government gets involved in would be better left to free enterprise and individuals or companies to do. They'll take care of it. Let the market work. Government doesn't need to get involved.
Amen to that. Well, of course, you know, I think that they think that they can get us through this recession by spending us into prosperity, but that money's going to have to be paid back one of these days, one way or another.
Yeah, by our children and our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. We're putting a terrible burden on them, and that's unfair because we've done it to them, and they had no voice in having it happen to them.
But the thing is that, Chris, one of these days, I'm afraid that the companies, the corporations, that are the hedge funds, and the various funds that buy these massive amounts of state bonds, they're going to either quit lending to us, or they're going to demand a great deal more in the way of a higher interest rate, which of course makes it much more difficult to pay off. What do you think about the governor's plan? He wants to borrow $15 billion based upon the presumed increased revenue we're going to get from the lottery. That sounds like a pretty good deal, doesn't it? I'm sorry.
Well, if you like snake oil salesmen, you'll like that, Dr. Stan. But no, it's not a good idea. First of all, we shouldn't be borrowing all that billions of dollars and putting the state deeper and deeper in debt. Besides that, of course, I'm not in favor of the lottery. I don't like gambling. I think it hurts the morality of people in many cases, and it entices people to use money for gambling when they could better use it for paying their bills and buying food for their family and now paying for gasoline.
Amen to that. Well, I'm really worried that, of course, we're going to have this massive deficit. I understand they're talking about a $20 billion deficit, coming up next year. And I don't think anybody knows how they're possibly going to get that taken care of. They're cutting back the money the state's going to give to the local communities. And that means the local community is going to have to start laying off people and cutting back on the amount of money for schools. And everybody's yelling and screaming. And, the children, we just can't do that to the children. But the trouble is there's no money there. I mean, we're getting into a situation now. The state does not have the money to pay for all of the educational system that we have with the little tiny class sizes. And you don't get better education with smaller classes. You get better education with better teachers teaching them the fundamentals of education rather than the new math and the phony spelling or whatever it is. I guess the non-phonics reading, where of course it doesn't matter whether you can spell or not, or sound out words. It's how you feel about the words and things of that sort.
Yeah, and they promote them whether they pass the test
right,
or not.
Right.
They keep promoting them from one grade to another, keep them going, and pretty soon they line up as seniors, and they still they can't pass a ninth grade test. So it's not doing the students any favor by treating them that way.
Amen to that. And of course, I don't know what the solution is. I think we're going to see, as this recession gets worse, we're going to see more and more government employees losing their salaries and losing their income.
Well, but they're bright people, Dr. Stan. They can find a job somewhere else in the free enterprise system.
But they won't get all the benefits. I mean, you work for government. You get all sorts of pension benefits and health benefits and a salary that you couldn't get in the private sector. I mean, these people make out like bandits once they get a job for government. That's the reason that they keep wanting ever bigger government so they get higher salaries.
Yeah, you're right. And, of course, as I said, they're good people. They're bright people. But we've just, made it so that, first of all, we've got more government than we can afford. These people, unfortunately, are going to see some cutbacks, and we're going to have to pull in our extravagant spending because we're broke, and we're getting further and further in debt every year. We're going to have to wake up and pay some music here, but it's not going to be easy. There's going to be some pain involved. But we're all going to be involved with it, and we're all going to have to cut back.
I agree with you. I think we're in for some very, very difficult times, and I don't think that things are going to get better by the end of this year. I think we're talking about years and years before we ever get back into a growth cycle again.
Well, two things we've got to do right away, Dr. Stan. We got to secure our borders. We got to close our borders. You don't have a nation if you don't have secure borders. And the other thing is this energy problem. I call them extreme environmentalists have prevented us from drilling in Alaska and offshore. There's a lot of oil still to be found in Alaska and also along the shore of the states. There's plenty of oil. It's going going to take about 10 years, though, before we can actually bring it on stream. So we better get started. And also, nuclear power. One of the safest, least expensive ways of producing power and electricity. We're going to have to get back into building more nuclear plants. There hasn't been a nuclear plant built in this country since when? What's the one on the coast in California that it's shut in right now, but that's the last one that was built?
About 30 years ago.
We're going to have to build some more. All the other countries all across the world are building nuclear plants right and left because they know that that's the future source of energy in the world.
Sure. It's really so funny. I was at a meeting not too long ago, and a young fellow came up, and, of course, he was talking about all the environmental problems we had. And I said, well, you know, what we really need to do is have nuclear energy. And he looked at me, his mouth dropped open. He said, would you want a nuclear power plant in your backyard? And I said, look, my son spent, probably three or four years on a nuclear carrier with a nuclear reactor that was generating the power for that. And, you know, neither he or the other 5,000 people on that carrier that had a nuclear reactor on board, none of them had any problems from it.
Right.
This fella got so mad at me, he yelled and screamed, and he was supposed to give me something. He was given to him to deliver to me. He wouldn't even bring it over. He was so mad at me for suggesting that nuclear power was all right. And, you know, these young people have never heard the alternative.
Yeah.
They don't understand. You can't get a nuclear explosion. Certainly, it was not a nuclear explosion at Chernobyl. It was a steam explosion, and it blew all this radioactive graphite all every place. That was simply because they didn't have a containment vessel. There's not one plant in America built like the one at Chernobyl.
No, they're all kind of safeguards. And, you know, we have tremendous supplies of coal in our country, probably more than any other country in the world. And there's a source of tremendous energy, and there's going to be technology developed where they can actually liquefy coal and use it to run in automobiles and trucks. I think that's the way that's really going to solve our oil shortage, is using the tremendous amount of coal that we have.
Well, of course, the Nazis actually used coal and converted it into aviation fuel and gasoline for their trucks. They didn't have any oil, and of course, they did that. And that was in the 1930s that they did that. And when I lived in South Africa, there's an organization known as Sasol, S-A-S-O-L, and they converted coal into gasoline. But, oh, shucks, we can't figure out how to do that here, and I don't believe that for 1 minute.
Now, listen, there are already plants that are doing it on a small scale, but we need to do more of it. But it's already here, and it's non-polluting, a tremendous supply. So there's all kind of things we can do and to eliminate our dependence on the Middle East and on the sheiks and the Middle East and being dependent on them for oil. Every year now, it's pouring billions of dollars from our country into their country, and we don't need to do that. We need to remove that weapon that they have over our head and get energy independent here in our own country.
Well, I think for our listeners out there, you should know that Senator Rogers is not a politician. He's not a lawyer, although he was a politician for 18 years. But, he was a little different than the others because he didn't have to be there. He's a geologist. And, of course, he's run an oil company of his own, small oil company. Did you do that while you were still up there in the Senate?
I've had it for 25 years, Dr. Stan.
And now you're still drilling oil?
Yeah, well, not doing too much drilling, just producing crude oil and selling it to the refinery. And I feel like I'm producing a needed product. It's coming out of the ground. It's a natural, it's a resource. I'm not making money on somebody else's money. I'm producing something that people can use in this country.
All right, fine. Of course, I think the realization has to be there's lots of places you could drill for oil here in this country. They're just not going to let you.
Right. It's the environmental problem. You know, I should call them the extreme environmentalists that really aren't thinking too clearly.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with Senator John Rogers. Senator Rogers, go right ahead. You were talking about the environmentalists who aren't thinking too clearly.
Yeah, well, they on it, Dr. Stan, and as you say, they get emotional. You told a story about the one that you encountered. And now they're pushing this global warming hoax. And again, I'm not saying that it's not getting warmer. In fact, it's warmer now than it was a few weeks ago here in California. It's called springtime, Dr. Stan. And, I'm not saying that maybe the world is getting a little bit warmer. It may be by less than 1 degree, but it's been going in cycles for thousands of years. We have cycles where, and it's due to the activity of the sunspots. It has nothing to do really with what mankind does here on Earth. We're not contributing to global warming. It's handled by the sunspots from the sun. Even on Mars, the ice polar caps on Mars are shrinking. Well, now, you can't convince me that the emission from my little minivan, I get 25 miles per gallon with it, that the emissions are causing the polar ice caps on Mars to melt when it's 35 million miles away.
Must be those Martians driving around.
maybe that's it. I don't know. It's really, really foolish. It's a hoax. What it is, I believe, the impetus and the pressure that the reason these people are pushing this global warming farce is they want to get control our lives, tell us what kind of vehicles we can and can't drive. Plus, they want to institute a global tax, a worldwide tax, and then use that money to proceed and promote their one world government idea. That's what's behind this whole global warming thing, and it has nothing really to do. You know, Dr. Stan, they talk about the emission of the carbon dioxide and nitrogen oxide, things like that. Do you know one volcanic eruption like Krakatoa back in the 1880s, Mount St. Helens in 1980, one eruption from one volcano puts more of that pollution and dust and noxious gases into the air than all of mankind since the first caveman built a fire to today? In just a few hours, you get more of the material that the environmentalists are screaming about. We've survived all of these volcanic eruptions. The Earth has survived with no damage. So it's absolutely, I get upset because I see how much money is being, taxing is being proposed by these environmental, extreme environmentalists on this global warming. Now, they want to make sure everybody cuts back on their emissions, and they're going to sell all these credits and make money that way. It's too bad that we don't have a little more common sense. And, of course, most of the scientists now are saying, hey, global warming is not caused by mankind's activity. It's a natural occurring cycle that we're going through. In fact, recently it looks like we may be headed into a cold cycle.
Well, then they'll call it climate change.
Colder and colder winters.
They'll say it's not global warming, it's climate change, but it's all related to the CO2, and that's why we've got to restrict people in their cars. We're going to be back in just a moment with Senator Don Rogers. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Senator Don Rogers, certainly one of my favorite guests. I always love to have him on. My telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Senator Rogers was just talking about how this whole global warming scam is a hoax. And, of course, it's really aimed at selling carbon credits. And, of course, Al Gore runs a company that sells carbon credits. In other words, it's not about cutting down on pollution. It's if you are a polluter, well, you can buy a carbon credit from somebody like Al Gore. And then, of course, you can keep producing as much pollution as you want to. Now, you're not cutting back on the solution. You're actually paying somebody else who is not polluting as much as they might, or maybe somebody who has a forest, and that forest is taking CO2 out of the atmosphere and is lowering your carbon footprint. I love these terms they use, Senator. It's extinguishing your carbon footprint, and that's why now you can continue polluting as much as you want. And, you know, I think it reminds me of what Goebbels said. It doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. If you say it often enough and convincingly enough, eventually everybody believes. And what really bothers me, Senator, is there's so many people out there who really believe in global warming and really, are frightened to death of the fact that soon all of our coastal cities are going to be underwater because the sea levels are going to rise so high, and of course, the crops are going to die, and mankind is going to be extinguished because of global warming.
Yeah, same thing. They frighten people, you know, so that they'll accept all kinds of restrictions on themselves and new taxation and all of that. And, you know, it's pathetic to see what's happening. And they talk about, you know, the oceans rising because of the polar caps melting. But let me point this out. You get a glass of water, and you put some ice cubes in it. Fill it about a third full of ice cubes and the rest water. And you mark the level where the fluid level is on the glass. And then when the ice all melts, check again and see where the fluid level is. You know where it'll be?
It may be lower than it was
before. Yeah, it'll be slightly lower because ice is less dense than water. So with the polar cap, and of course, for the most part, you've got huge masses of ice floating on the ocean. If they all melted, right now the polar ice caps, they're displacing the water. So you've got a sea level. If all the polar caps melted completely, you'd have slightly lower sea level than you have now. So tell the people not stand over near where you live along the coast of California. Don't worry. Don't sell your coastal property. You're not going to be flooded out. You're safe.
But, of course, the thing is, it doesn't matter that it's logical. It doesn't matter what what these people say is a lie. Because they control the educational system, literally, they control the media. And literally, every newspaper in America is touting this lie of global warming. And they, oh, my goodness, think of those polar bears. They're endangered. Now they're dying off. And they're not dying off. They got more polar bears than they've ever had before. This was a political thing. Just like giving Al Gore a Nobel Peace Prize for his fraudulent work. I mean, it was political, and of course, the polar bears, ladies and gentlemen, the polar bears are not going to drown as the ice melts. I can guarantee that. There are more polar bears now than there were 20 years ago by far.
Right. They're moving south, and they got more food now than they've ever had before, right. So they're doing okay. And besides that, the polar cap, the north polar cap, there is some melting going on. It's getting smaller. But down south, the south polar cap, on the east side, is actually getting thicker. So here again, it's much to do about nothing. It's unfortunate. There's going to be a lot of money spent. And, you know, you touched on something, Dr. Stan. These so-called scientists that are promoting this global warming, they say, the world's about to come to an end. Have you ever noticed that just about the time their grant money runs out, say they get a six-year grant or a 10-year grant, just before it runs out, they come out with this report that alarms everybody, that scares everybody, and guess what? They get their grant renewed for another 10 years.
And if they told the truth, they wouldn't get it renewed. Actually,
no.
Dr. Art Robinson's first a friend of mine, has runs the Oregon research center for research up there. There are over 33,000 scientists in the United States have signed a petition saying, there is no relationship between global warming and human activity. 33,000 is Dr. Art Robinson. You can look it up on the Internet. We've had Dr. Robinson on many times. Understand, it's all a scam. It's all a lie. And we need you out there, of course, ladies and gentlemen, getting the information out. We've got a great DVD on global warming by Dr. Kaufman. We've got a book called Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming, Politically Incorrect Guide, another one called Climate Change, Al Gore. These books, four tape sets on it, Help us get the information out. You get educated and help us educate others. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let's guest this evening, Senator Don Rogers. Senator Rogers, what part do you think speculation in the oil market has played in driving the prices of oil up? Do you think it's supply and demand, or do you think the speculators are playing a part in the rising price of oil?
No, it's supply and demand, Dr. Stan. It's like anything else. You get a shortage of something, the price goes up, and instead of penalizing people and raising taxes on them, what you do is you go to work and you create more supply. That's the way to bring the price down. And I just note, you know, today the Democrat-controlled House of Representatives and the Senate, they tried to bring a bill up, I think it was in the Senate, to put a so-called windfall profits tax, excess profits tax on the oil companies. Fortunately, they didn't get enough votes. They came close. And so they couldn't bring the bill up for a vote. But that is so wrong-headed. You know, they say, well, these filthy rich oil companies are raising the price. Who, Dr. Stan, who owns these big oil companies? It's the thousands and thousands of small stockholders, people who buy stock and risk their capital with the oil companies like ExxonMobil or Chevron, Texaco, or whatever. They put their money out there. They invest it. It is at risk, but they invest it. And then they get dividends on that investment. They use that money to put their kids through college, to pay their bills, so forth. So that's who owns these big oil companies. And now your question about the speculators, they don't control. If the price is controlled by people in a market situation, in, I think in New York, that look at, well, what do we think the price of oil should be? What's it going to be a month from now or 2 months from now? Now, they set the price based on supply and demand. The oil companies do not set the price. The service station operators who dispense the gas, they don't set the price. And let's look at the profit. They talk about this huge, the greedy oil companies and the huge profit they make. The reason the numbers are so big is because it's a big company and they sell a lot of gas. They refine a lot of oil. They sell a lot of gasoline. It's a huge volume. But, you know, look at what really counts. How much do they make per dollar of sale? The oil companies make about 9 cents per dollar of sale. Coca-Cola makes 22 cents per dollar of sale.
Yeah, but we can only put that in our...
yeah, you know, maybe you're going to...
Hold that puppet just a moment. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I was talking to Senator Rogers about the fact that there was legislation that was introduced for a windfall profit on the oil companies. He said that's ridiculous. And you don't want to tax the oil companies because they're making money. You know, because of the high price, what you want to do is increase the supply. You increase the supply of oil by simply allowing the drilling, and suddenly, why you'd have an abundance, and the price would come on down. And certainly, I agree with him. The problem is not to tax the oil companies more; it is to allow the drilling to create more in the way, of course, of the product, and we would not have the problem we have today. It's all done artificially by suppressing our ability to drill in Anwar, to drill off the, you know, certainly off the East Coast and the West Coast of the United States. And this has been done intentionally, in my estimation, to create artificial shortages that's brought us to where we are today. Well, Senator, certainly as we look and see what's happening, and certainly this is though going to have a tremendous impact upon our economy, and certainly we're not going to solve the problem by taxing the oil companies. They're going to have to make their, you know, they'll just have to raise the price of oil to make up for.
You know, companies don't pay taxes, I understand. It's just another expense like anything else, but pass it on to the consumer. And you know, something I think that a lot of people don't realize, but you take here in California, the average price of gasoline is about $4, say, a gallon. You know, almost a dollar of that is tax.
Right.
And in Europe, they're paying $8 a gallon for a gallon of gasoline. $6 is tax.
Well, I think that is because, of course, the politicians over there want to get the people out of their cars. And even more than, of course, the funding that comes from the gasoline taxes, it's a way of forcing people to take mass transit. And, of course, but if they do that here, we don't have the mass transit. It would take us years to develop it, like they have in Europe. And certainly it'll take years to develop the oil. You know, if we were to start right now, what would it be, 5 years before the oil came on?
More like 10, Dr.
More like 10. So people have to understand, of course, that we're in real trouble. In other words, certainly we cannot have the mass transit. It would take, you know, a dozen years to get the mass transit in throughout our entire society. And, of course, it's going to be a long time before there's enough oil. And we're going to be paying higher and higher taxes for our oil in the meantime. Would you agree with that?
You bet. And look, if the politicians really wanted to take away some of the pain at the pump, why don't they take the tax off? You think they're going to do that?
not much of a chance of that.
Don't hold your breath, please.
Well, the thing is that the politicians never cut back on taxes. In fact, you know, of course, I think it was a remarkable thing that George Bush was able to get the tax cuts in. Of course, he had to do that because the economy was weak, and this was a means of stimulating the economy. This is what it was really all about. The problem is that if you cut taxes and then increase spending, you're going to get into trouble, and that's why we're in so much trouble today. I'm all in favor of cutting taxes, but I'm also in favor of cutting back spending. But, of course, it's pretty hard to find politicians who want to cut back on spending, isn't it?
Well, sure. You know, they like to have the money to spend, and they can then bring the bacon home to their district, you know, bring the pork home with all the earmarks. They think they're doing a great job, you know, to bring the money back to their district, and that's how they think they get reelected. And unfortunately, in many cases, that's true. But I like politicians to say, hey, I don't want a bunch of pork to take back to my district. Let's cut our spending. Let's reduce the burden on the people. Let's cut back on taxes and don't increase spending. Because we're just going deeper and deeper in the hole in the wrong direction. So I don't like to see I never vote for a politician that says, oh, I love my job. I love this job. And then they try to bring the pork back home. Those are the worst kind of politicians. And I tell you, I'd suggest to your listeners, Dr. Stan, that if they hear politicians talk that way, unelect them just as soon as they can.
Well, of course, the trouble is, you know, an awful lot of our people here like bacon. They like the pork. And you know, it's good for the business and, you know, it's good for the, you know, for the local community. But they don't understand that, you know, this eventually creates more and more and more problems because your senator's got to make deals, your elected assemblyman's got to make deals, your congressman's got to make deals. And if he wants people to vote for his pork, he's got to vote for theirs. And then, of course, we have this massive debt that's come about because of all this unnecessary spending, and most of it's unconstitutional, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is. And how do the politicians, say, on the federal level, how do they pay these bills? You know how they do it? By printing more money. The printing presses are going 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I bet the smoke's coming out of the wheels of the printing presses. They're printing more and more paper dollars with no backing. That money goes out into circulation, and then what does that do? That decreases the value of our dollar. The American dollar is going down, down, down compared to other currencies across the world. In fact, about a year ago, the country of Kuwait, they stopped taking American dollars in payment of their oil. They said, no, we don't want American dollars because they're losing value. We want euros or we want some other currency, a Swiss franc or something. We don't want American dollars. And if there are other countries that are going to follow suit. And I tell you, if we keep hammering on the OPEC leaders to produce more oil so we can get the price down, you know what they're going to say? Hey, that's pretty hypocritical. You want us to up our production, yet you won't drill in Alaska. You won't drill offshore to increase your own production, so why are you hammering on us? And they're going to turn around and say, okay, we're going to stop taking your American dollars. we want something else. Now, what's that going to do to the American dollar, Dr. Stanley?
Well, I'll tell you what. We lose the reserve status of the American dollar, and this country is going to be in real trouble because all of these $1 trillion that the Chinese are holding in American dollars and probably $800 billion the Japanese are holding, you know, if they can't do it, in fact, it's so interesting is that, you know, we're so worried that they're going to come in here and buy things with all these dollars that they're holding. One of these days they're going to say, we don't want your dollars anymore. We're not going to hang on to them. We're going to throw them on the market. And when that happens, there's going to be just rampant inflation in this country is my fear.
You're right. You're absolutely right. And the dollar is going to lose value more rapidly. And I tell you, we're headed into some real tough times. This country's in a recession right now. It's just going to get deeper and deeper unless we change our policy.
Amen to that. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Our guest this evening is Senator John Rogers, but he's a geologist. He has his own little oil company, and he's been pumping oil for many years out of wells and selling it on the market. Now, certainly, how difficult would it be to actually to drill on your own? Let's imagine that they did open up offshore drilling. Would small operators like you be able to do that, or would you have to have literally hundreds of millions of dollars behind you?
It's not a small operator game. It would be for the majors. But even with that, with all the environmental restrictions now, you've got to jump through so many hoops just to get a permit to drill a well that it would take probably a couple of years just to get a permit to drill. And then you got to drill and then hopefully find something, and then you have to complete it and then figure out a way to get it from the well to the refinery. And if it's offshore, of course, you've got people that are screaming and worried about you're going to spill some oil. But the technology now is such that there's not been an oil spill from a producing well offshore of the United States since way back, I don't know what, 30 years ago, yeah, when they had the problem offshore Ventura. I think it was Union Oil had a problem. That's the last time there's been any problem with an oil spill from a well. There have been tankers that have run aground and run into things and have caused a problem, like running into the bridge in San Francisco or something like that, but it has not been the oil operators. They have been super, super careful, and we can drill all kinds of wells up and down the coast and not have a problem with an oil spill.
Well, Asenia, what about, we hear about these large deposits of oil up there in Montana and in eastern Idaho. Is that oil shale or is that a big oil pool up there? What is that about?
It depends. It's both. But there are a lot of oil sands in our country that we could get oil out of. There are a lot of places that still are unexplored. Not as many as there used to be. It's getting a little hard to find onshore, but there are a lot of places offshore now that we can drill with a good chance of finding large oil fields. And of course, Alaska, we don't know until we drill in the ANWR, the Alaskan Natural Wildlife Refuge. We don't know until we actually drill a well, but from all the geophysical evidence, running seismic surveys, we're pretty sure the structure is there, and we have some large oil fields that are there. We just have to go in and drill and develop it, and then get it from there down to the refineries. That's another problem, Dr. Stan. You know, we haven't been able to, because again of the extreme environmentalists, we haven't been able to drill or to build a refinery in this country, a new refinery in what, something like 30 years?
30 years, right.
The only way the refiners have been able to keep up is by expanding their existing refineries almost to the maximum, but they've just run out of ability to expand. And we're going to have to get the okay to build some new refineries in this country.
Oh, I agree with you. I think it's terrible. I mean, it's 30 years since we had a refinery, 30 years since we had a nuclear power plant built. You know, 30 years that they've really shut down pretty well the oil development in this country. People keep talking about peak oil. I think that is simply, you know, to throw you off track, to justify the fact that we're not doing the drilling. People have to understand, as Senator Rogers says, you got to jump through 13 hoops just to drill a well here in the United States. And after you put all the time and money in, you're probably not going to get a permit anyway, because they wanted to shut down oil development here. That's unconscionable, and now we see the end result of it. When you go to the pump and it's $4 a gallon, $4.25 I paid the other day for unleaded gasoline. Just unbelievable what's going on. And where's the outcry from the American people? They don't understand. They think that we don't have any more oil. That's the reason we're not developing it.
And they blame the oil company.
Right.
And that's not where the blame should lie. The oil company would love to drill more wells and have a bigger supply of crude oil and more refineries so they can have plenty of gasoline available for the public, for their customers. They'd love to do that.
Well, you know, certainly within the last month or so, they found a massive oil field just off the east coast of Brazil. I mean, this is enough to make them energy independent. Now, they're already energy independent because they create ethanol, but they're not going to get created out of corn because corn, you know, is a staple food for animals and for human beings.
And you know, ethanol is being mandated now. Here again, by the politicians in Washington, very short-sighted mandates, but, you know, it costs more energy, Dr. Sand, to produce a gallon of ethanol than you get when you burn it.
I know, it's just so ridiculous. Not only that, but it would not be economically feasible if we weren't subsidizing this at the... Got a big lobby program there in Washington D.C. and we're subsidizing by our tariffs the sugar producing industry here, and they get richer and richer, and we get poorer and poorer. It seems the way it goes.
No, you're right. The government isn't the solution, Dr. Stan. In most cases, government's the problem.
Amen to that. And I think it's so important for people to understand that. You have a free society, you got to get government out of it. You got to get government programs out of it. You got to let the free market work. The free market does work, and the controlled market doesn't. That's why Russia got into trouble. And that's why China is in many respects, going towards a free market system rather than the controlled central planning system they have in the Soviet Union, because it just doesn't work. And yet, we're moving more towards the Soviet Union, and China's moving more towards a free market system. Boy, we live in a world that's gone crazy, don't we?
Yes, it's insanity.
Well, anyway, we've only got a couple of minutes more. What is the message you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening?
Well, you know, I think we're going to have to, because of time, we're running out of time, Dr. Stan. So people are going to have to just become more interested in learning the issues and the people that are running for office. Quiz them, you know, go to the town meetings when they run for their candidates. Quiz them, find out what they know. Do they really understand the Constitution? In fact, I've suggested this, that maybe before any person is allowed to run as a candidate for a political office, for a judgeship, they ought to have to pass a constitutional written exam to find out if they understand the Constitution and the proper role of government. Maybe we ought to have them pass an exam before they can run.
I think that's a great idea. You know, of course, it required doctors to take a certain number of hours of education every month. I mean, every year you have to have 25 hours of education. Every year you don't get your medical license renewed. Maybe we ought to do that for politicians.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Yeah, because, you know, we've got to have a political solution. That's the quickest way to solve our problem. And the only way you're going to get that is by electing the right kind of people. And there are good people out there. There are good people who'd like to be candidates and would run, who have a good constitutional foundation. We just got to seek them out and convince them to run and then get behind them and get them elected. And then we can change this thing very, very quickly.
Well, you know, I think if people really understood what freedom is all about, if they understood that the foundation of our freedom is limiting the power of the federal government, and, of course, in due course, limiting the power of the state and the local government, but America was unique and different and offered hope to people throughout the world because we limited the power of the federal government by the chains of the Constitution. And the old adage, we took the chains off the people and put them on government, well, they're taking the chains off the government and forging them for the people again. And I think Senator Rogers would agree that unless we get back to our constitutional system, which is a great system, it's not that it's ever failed, it's simply that it is being totally ignored by the people who are running things in Washington, D.C., and true, even at the state level. Senator, you hang on here for just a moment, and we'll be ending the program here in three or four more minutes, but right now, of course, this is Dr. Stan, I guess this evening, Senator Don Rogers, one of my favorite, one of the few politicians I really respected. Well, Senator, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. So what would you like to leave with our listeners?
Well, you know, I sound like a broken record, I guess, but we're just going to have to inform the people, remind them of their responsibility as a citizen, a voting citizen, to look closely at these people that are running for office, quiz them, you know, keep the heat on them, hold their feet to the fire. Make sure they're the right kind of candidate, that they understand the proper role of government, limited role of government, that they understand the Constitution, how our government's supposed to work, because we're a constitutional republic. That's what we intended. We're started out to be. A lot of people, you never hear them say that. Candidates talk about our democracy. Democracy is not our form of government. It was never intended to be. Unfortunately, because the Constitution has been ignored and has been decimated in many cases, we're approaching becoming a democracy, but we should get back to being a constitutional republic. So I guess that's the thought I'd like to leave with the people. Get out your Constitution, read your history books, read about the Founding Fathers, and find out what their intent was when they established this wonderful country that we have, and let's get back to it. That's going to be the solution.
And, of course, the simple thing is that the Constitution is the law of our land. The problem is, of course, it's being totally ignored by the politicians, and the Supreme Court does not have the courage to say this is the law of the land and this is the way that it should be. And they want to tell us we have an evolving Constitution. Doesn't say that in the Constitution, but the corrupt people that they put into our courts want it to evolve because they don't want those restrictions. I mean, after all, our form of government limits what the politicians can do. They don't want any limitations. They want to be able to tax and tax and spend and elect and elect, and because that's good for them, and they can stay there for 30 or 40 or 50 years. I think Robert Byrd's, I don't know how long he's been back there in the United States Senate, but I think he's been there. He's 90 years old. He's been there for a long, long time, and he's done it by simply getting pork for West Virginia, where he comes from, and taxing and stacking and spending and talking about the Constitution and then violating it on a regular basis. Well, Senator, thank you so very much for being with us. It's always a pleasure. And if anything comes up you'd like to talk to my nationwide audience about, why, we always love to hear from you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure being on your program. And let me just say this. Thank you very much for what you do and for you providing information in a program like this to remind people about what really made this country great. You do a tremendous service for the people. So thank you for what you do, Dr. Stan.
God bless you. Thanks so much, Senator. Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Senator Rogers. He's one of those people who's just got a lot of good common sense, and certainly is a well-educated man, but a patriot who is willing to give 18 of his years of his life up there in Sacramento, trying to have an impact. He did have an impact. He saved you an awful lot of money on your gift taxes and your inheritance taxes, saved the people of this state about $50 billion that would have been wasted by the politicians if he hadn't been there. Well, of course, if you really need to get in and study our Constitution, and we have, of course, a number of books. We have one called Betrayed by the Bench, written by our good friend John Stormer, who wrote the book None Dare Call It Treason, and None Dare Call It Treason 25 years later. But, of course, Betrayed by the Bench is certainly the best book we have on the Supreme Court and how they have betrayed the American people. By taking God and prayer out of our schools, and by taking the Ten Commandments out of our schools, and simply by centralizing all power in Washington, D.C., and take away our property rights as they did in Kelo, and understand what the Supreme Court is doing. And so we suggest you get the book Betrayed by the Bench, and then to really supplement that, you need my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because John talks about what's happening legally. I talk about what's happening spiritually and why the members of the Supreme Court took God and prayer out of our schools. Everybody will tell you that they did it, and they will tell you what they did is wrong, but they will not tell you why. And that's why my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, is so vitally important, especially today. And then, of course, we hope that you'll either get my CD, of course, pardon me, my DVD that goes with that, or you can get the either a CD or a DVD or a CD-ROM that gives you the story. You can get the DVD of the talk, and then you can get the book as the Brotherhood of Darkness special. And, of course, we hope that you'll copy that and get it into other people's hands. We hope you'll want to get my talk on the forbidden secret, because there is a secret that has been passed down for 5,000 years. A secret that's been passed down for 5,000 years through the secret societies and through those who practice the mystery religions. And you can't understand anything going on today or the significance of what's happening unless, of course, you understand what that secret is that's being popularized today by Oprah Winfrey, by certainly Larry King, by Jim Carrey, by Ellen DeGeneres, and by many of the key people in our country. There is a secret, and of course, you need to understand it. You will understand how dangerous it is. The forbidden secret, the talk, and then the syllabus that goes with that, vitally important. My talk on the planned police state, and the syllabus that goes with that. Our material on 4-tape set on concentration camps. The DVD, Barbed Wire Over America. And then, of course, you can get the concentration camp special that will give you so much information that you can share with other people. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are concentration camps. There really is a plan to create a national emergency, suspend the right of habeas corpus, to round up Americans and put them in concentration camps. And people say that could never happen in America. And I would say, why not? If they could talk you into the fact that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and that's why we had to go over there and kill a million people. And then, of course, we got into Afghanistan because we had to get Osama bin Laden. They wouldn't let us get Osama bin Laden. If you haven't read the book, we still have a few copies called Crude Politics. Goes into the interviews with the members of the special forces who were in Iraq. And they will tell you, we were not allowed, pardon me, they were in Afghanistan. They wanted to get Osama bin Laden. They weren't allowed to. We didn't go into Afghanistan to get Osama bin Laden. We went there so we could take over that country and put the pipelines through it. But, of course, even more than that is the belief of the importance of war. Well, because wars get you behind the government. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Like Ed McMahon, yeah. Good morning, good afternoon, good...